Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. Happy Scary Movie Month.
It's Scary Movie Month.
My name is Patrick Bromley. I am joined for our first proper Scary Movie Month podcast.
Proper.
By JB, my favorite washed up horror icon.
And by proper, it means we're having sandwiches on the settee.
Crusts removed.
Of course.
Happy Scary Movie Month, everyone. You can find our website at fthismovie.net. And you can follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Listen to us on Stitcher.
So it's called Stitcher?
Stitcher.
Oh, I thought it was called Sutures.
No, no.
That would be different.
It is Scary Movie Month. We kicked it off with our commentary for Maximum Overdrive. Hopefully you guys have heard that. And the way that it's always gone, or at least the past 4 or 5 years, we've been doing this now five. This is our fifth Scary Movie Month.
Yes.
We do a commentary, and then J Bones and I record the first podcast, usually some sort of a theme. So this year we're doing our favorite Vincent Price movies, right?
What?
Our favorite Vincent Price movies.
I was told, oh shit.
I was told
this was about ways to liven up mac and cheese.
Oh.
I brought recipes.
That's fine. I like recipes.
Oh.
Usually
you start and I'll tell
you. Yeah. Well, we have all this like business to get through up front because, again, usually when we do this episode, we get to read through some of our favorite entries in the Scary Movie Challenge happening all month at fthismovie.net. Watch a scary movie, leave a 7-word review. And usually we have, you know, 50, sometimes 100 to choose from. And we say, where are we going to start? There are 100 to choose from.
But this year, this was serious homework.
I don't even know where to start saying, like,
I was sitting at my laptop, read, no, read, no, read, yes. Copy, paste, paste, match style. Take out the date, so it's all
everyone
nice.
Is doing such an incredible job. Like, we could not be happier or more excited with how successful this has been this
As
year.
As of this morning, we had 450, which is crazy.
We're recording this on the morning of October 5th, and we're averaging about 100 posts a day, which, again, our first year of doing this, we got to 100. And I was like, well, that's a success. And we beat that in our first day this year. So it has been crazy successful. Thank you guys all for posting so much and watching so many scary movies.
So I have some of my favorites here.
All right.
And I also have ways to liven up mac and cheese.
Okay.
Because I was misinformed.
Number one, bacon. Number two,
that's
PCP.
That bacon is all I got.
Oh, you should try it with PCP.
That's all I got.
It's great.
Andrew Gibbons.
You fill your belly and you murder a cop.
I had written this earlier in the month on the website, I think, that Bela Lugosi was the bacon of actors. He makes everything he's in better.
Sure.
Andrew Gibbons reviews the original Halloween, his 7-word review. Evil incarnate proves physician wrong, drives car.
We have not compared notes, but just so JB can see, that's also the first one that I wrote down because I was a big fan of it. I didn't know where to pick. I didn't know where to choose because there were so many good ones. I read these and they're so entertaining and they're so clever.
And this is stuff you hear all the time, usually on children's programming. Just because you weren't chosen doesn't mean
right.
that. But in this case, it's really true. Although I discovered one of our listeners, readers, commenters has a sense of humor that I share.
Okay. Jeremy Wickett says, of A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge, tagline, witness the power of sexual conformity.
Charles Lewis on The Shining. Nice guy is shitty at caretaking job.
Travis L., who wrote a bunch that I liked and I didn't know where to start choosing his, says of The Blob, 1988. Blob, eat rest of Entourage cast, please.
And I got to say, if I could just do all these in a row, Travis is hitting it out of the park.
All right.
Hands down, Travis L. has my favorites. Here are a few. Travis L. on Eraserhead. What the fuck did I just watch? Travis L. on Trick or Treat. Never eat anything Dylan Baker gives you.
That is one of my favorites because that's not just a great joke about Trick or Treat. That's a joke about happiness also.
Oh, yeah.
Man,
it's about Dylan Baker's career.
That is so clever.
Travis L. on Tremors. Underground worms want a slice of bacon. Do you see what he did there? And finally, oh, I would say this is my favorite, but they're all my favorites. Travis L. on The Exorcist. That's not how you're supposed to masturbate.
I have another Travis down here.
Oh my god!
I think somewhere. I had the trick or treat one. I thought I had another one, but Gunther Peters says of Contracted, decaying chick still looks quite hot, right?
Yeah, I remember the first time I read that. John Murphy on Maximum Overdrive, King and baseball players. Coke is harmful.
Matt Sollenberger of Willow Creek, alternate title, My Bigfoot Creek Wedding. That's amazing.
And these are so great, as Patrick Reed says, I'm remembering the first time I read them. William Chaddock on Tusk. Spoiler, Kevin Smith movie features a metaphor.
I have another good one for Tusk from Roger Pottersnack. Tusk, would you Tusk me? I'd Tusk me.
I really thought that every single person who reviewed Tusk came up with something
it's amazing.
Clever. Tom Bartman on The Woman in Black. Your magic can't help you now, Potter.
Our own Eric Asperschlager, we don't often read our own people, but his for The Monkey's Paw, the 2013 remake, made me laugh. Wish I'd skipped this. Also, unlimited wishes.
Jack Dignan on Dracula Untold, the funniest film you'll see all year.
That does not look good. Mike with a Y on The Woman. Rotten teeth destroy marriages. Abuse doesn't help.
Michael Carey on the original 1941 Wolfman. He should have never bought that cane.
Yeah, right. Clinton Jones of Maximum Overdrive. Dixie Boy was also King's Coke dealer. I would like to – we deserve, I think, a little bit of credit for all the Maximum Overdrive cocaine jokes because that was a running gag on our commentary.
And all the people watching Maximum Overdrive. Yeah. Ghost Dinosaur on Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992.
Great screen name, by the way.
Alternately, Dracula and Minna watch a porno.
Heather Wixon, our friend on Halloween 2, I had to include this, the 1981 Halloween 2. The night Ben Tramer didn't come home, and I had to include it because that shot of Ben Tramer walking down the street and being hit by a car that immediately explodes into a fireball is my favorite thing. It's the craziest scene in that whole movie. I love it, so I was happy that she pointed it out.
Carl Wonders on Videodrome. I put who in the what now?
That's one of my favorites. I had another good video drum from Eli the Butcher Boy. Does your chest vagina also take DVD?
I almost put that one down too. Gabby Farrow, friend of the site Gabby Farrow on Mask of the Red Death. Hell's empty. All the devils are here.
Adam Armour of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I really like the Sawyer's armchair.
Tom Smail on the original Cabinet of Dr. Caligari from 1920. This is an early Tim Burton, right?
Michael Carey of House of a Thousand Corpses. Murder Ride really got the job done.
Professor Tom Von Smail.
He's a professor.
I so appreciate the fact that he changed
his
commenter name. Professor Tom Von Smail on the original Dracula from 1931. No more sleeping with the windows open.
I think I'm out. So because I did not go, I did like the first 100, 150, and then I gave up. J-Bones went all the way through. So
okay, couple more. Keep Jeremy going. Graham on Evil Dead 2. Never read a book bound in skin.
Yes.
And I think this next one from Mr. Tin Peach.
Sure.
I think summarizes what a lot of our listeners and readers think and do, but they're not courageous enough to put it down. They're not courageous enough to actually write it down in the comments. This is from Mr. Tin Peach on the film Wreck from 2007. I'm fucking drunk. I like this movie. Kathy, who's been with us for a really long time, Kathy, on The Curse of the Werewolf from 1961, summarizes Patrick and Doug's problem with the movie. Here's Kathy's seven-word review.
I remember this one.
But first, How I Met Your Mother.
That's amazing.
Steve K. on Mask of the Red Death. Prices Prospero plies pretty peasant. Pestilence prevails.
Nice.
Say that 10 times fast. Lupercus 68 on the 1941 Wolfman. Larry Talbot's dad is the Invisible Man? J.M. Vargas on Feast. Like Project Greenlight, Monsters Never Truly Dead.
I like that one.
And finally, and I put this last on purpose, our very own Heath Holland on The Old Dark House from 1931. He wrote, why doesn't Universal tout this amazing film? Well, Heath, I have your answer.
Oh, yay.
The Old Dark House
it's
was a
learning
lost...
time.
Get out your pens, you know. The fat man's going to give us a quiz. For almost 50 years, The Old Dark House was a lost film. It was thought to not exist. And Curtis Harrington, who later became a director, was very good friends with James Whale at the end of his life. And as it turns out, Curtis Harrington, we owe him a debt of gratitude because he wound up with the only print known to exist. The only reason why we have the old Dark House is that Curtis Harrington brought it back into circulation, I believe in the 80s. I think the copyright might have expired, so Universal has less of a reason to tout it. But Heath is absolutely correct. If you're into the Universal films, Old Dark House is like, what the hell? It's a haunted house film. Karloff's in it in this crazy makeup. It was the film Karloff made right after Frankenstein. Well worth your time.
I only saw it once. They showed it as part of a massacre a couple of years ago. I think that was the year we were in the other seats. So I would need to see it again. I remember enjoying it, but the print was kind of beat up.
The other seats were the Clive Barker
correct
toilet exploding correct massacre, which correct. I have bad memories. But it's worth seeing only to see Ernest Thesiger say, "Have another potato." That's one of his lines.
Couple things about the Scary Movie Challenge. Keep kicking ass because it's amazing. I'm so excited to see a lot of returning names, a
We're
ton
so
of
happy
new names.
That everyone this year knows how to count.
Well, yes. It has been pointed out by more than one person, like, hey, try to keep your reviews to 7. Try to, like, maybe leave out some of the extraneous conversation. I like people being able to talk about movies, but sometimes I have to go in and delete extra comments just so we have a count. And also try to only review horror movies, if possible.
Yes.
Don't be funny by doing other movies.
It's been done.
Stick to horror movies. But it's going great, and I'm so excited.
Frozen is not a horror film.
To keep reading these. J-Bones, have you seen anything scary lately?
Yes. I've been schizophrenically trying to watch both the new Vincent Price box for this podcast and the old Vincent Price box. I noticed through the Scary Movie Challenge that our friend Gabby has been doing the same thing. And yet, I've been also watching the original Universal horror films because I discovered, besides the fact that they got spiffed up for Blu-ray recently, or last year, or the year before, I recently bought a new TV that makes everything look fancy and fun. And I'm watching these things lately, and between the job Shout Factory's doing, between the job Universal did, and the new TV, it's like I want to watch everything again. So for every Price, I watch Universal, and for every Universal, I watch a Price. And I watched the original Dracula again. Always fun. And noticed on the disc there was a supplementary feature. We were talking about this yesterday that I had ignored on a previous disc. It was like a half an hour overview of Bela Lugosi's career. That's well worth your time. Watched the original Frankenstein again, and I think I've watched House on Haunted Hill, The Raven, and Last Man on Earth on the Vincent Price boxes, not only to prepare for this podcast, but also to see what the transfers look like. Because in the past, House on Haunted Hill, which also slipped into public domain, yeah, has looked really awful.
There's like a version on Netflix that is not great.
VHS filmed through an aquarium. And I've seen versions of Last Man on Earth, which ironically looked so awful, people thought it was deliberate. Like when Night of the Living Dead would look awful,
right,
people made that ridiculous. Oh, it's supposed to look like Vietnam footage on the evening news. No. So when what was the Laserdisc company that originally put out that Night of the Living Dead? Yeah, Elite Entertainment put out, you know. And
made a joke of it.
The greatest
bad transfer,
joke.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before.
I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast.
Well,
Is it on the DVD?
Because I nearly had a heart attack.
Yeah, I remember that story. I don't know. That joke isn't on the DVD, right?
Well, no, because it was very I think it was for me. Because I had owned so many different versions of Night of the Living Dead, it wasn't funny. And Elite put out the word, it's coming. We found the original negative, and it's got all these things before they were destroyed in that flood. And, just wait. And then it was delayed. So then you had to wait even longer. And I had pre-ordered it. And remember, this is the days of Laserdisc. And I think it was $75.
Yeah,
It was pricey.
Yeah.
And I remember the day it came, and I ran to the Laserdisc player. This is a really long time ago. And the folks at Elite knew this is what was going to happen. You were going to run and put it on. And the movie starts up, and it is the shittiest version of Night of the Living Dead you've ever seen. Just worse than anything. Yeah. And, I waited 75 hours. And then the image freezes and explodes. And it becomes the Elite logo. And then the THX logo. And it starts up again. And it looks like it was filmed yesterday.
Yeah.
This is the greatest practical joke in the history of Laserdisc.
That's pretty awesome.
And we really owe a debt of gratitude to Scream Factory, Shout Factory, because clearly they've identified a market, but they are really going the distance. The stuff that they put out is so good in every way. The packaging, the extra stuff, and especially the transfers, which sometimes we ignore in the world, in the land of Blu-ray, we tend to get spoiled. But I've seen some shitty House on Haunted Hills, and I've seen some really shitty Last Man on Earth. And on Last Man on Earth, which I watched last night, the opening stuff of the town and, oh, look, right. There's no one there and there's bodies lying on the ground has always looked bad. And I think some of it might be stock footage or B-roll or something. But the minute it officially starts, it is the best looking print of Last Man on Earth I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So, Patrick, that's what I've been watching lately.
I saw ABCs of Death 2. And by the time this podcast airs, I will have a review of it up at fthismovie.net. If you saw ABCs of Death, you know exactly what to expect. It's one of those where it's like, well, they didn't seem to learn any lessons. Some of the other writers I've been following have all commented, well, this one's much better. It's more consistent. The shorts are better. I disagree. I think it's about the exact same. There were a few that are like, okay, that was kind of fun. Mostly it's a drag. The very last one, and I won't even say what it's for, it's Z is for, and I won't say what, because I think that's kind of a spoiler, is really good. It's the best one in the movie, and it goes to some amazingly dark places, and it almost makes it worth sitting through the other 25, but it's not a movie I can recommend.
Is this on demand?
It is, yeah. It's on iTunes and on VOD. It's getting a limited release on Halloween.
Because I only know about these things courtesy of Patrick and his love of these curios. But lately on the Scary Movie Challenge, we've had more and more people checking out VHS and VHS 2, which we've done podcasts on, and these ABC of Seas of Death movies. And I got to say, it warms my little black heart that more and more people in their 7-word reviews are sort of agreeing with me about what I think of these things.
Which is to say that I have a vastly different opinion than you?
I know that you like both VHS and VHS 2, specifically one sequence in VHS 2, more than I do.
Okay. You don't think that middle section is great?
I was happy, ultimately, that you offered me the heroin to watch the movies. And I sat down and watched those two movies for the podcast because there's no way in hell I would watch them otherwise. And I think both of them are full of delights.
Okay.
I just sometimes get sort of frustrated about the state of horror films in 2014.
Well, ABCs of Death is even worse in terms of what you're talking about. Because again, it only leads to the same punchline over and over again. And ABCs of Death 2, again, I don't think this is a spoiler. And I mentioned this in the review. So it seems to be this contest who can be kind of more fucked up, you know, in 5 minutes. And the place that a lot of these filmmakers go in order to win that contest is they do stuff to kids, like in a lot of it. And
I believe I've talked about this before on the podcast. Yeah. That's off limits.
Yeah. The only other movie I'll talk about, which I just saw for the first time, I had never seen it, and it was just added to Netflix Instant, is David Cronenberg's Shivers, a.k.a.
They Came From Within.
They Came From Within, which was an interesting curiosity, and you can watch it and say, well, I see where so much of his stuff comes from, and he's very much, you know, there's a lot of Cronenberg in it for being sort of his first horror movie. I can't say that I loved the movie. I think his first few movies are kind of rough going. I think there's some great stuff in it, but for me, he doesn't really come together until like Videodrome. I know people love The Brood, and I know people even love Rabid. But Videodrome, for me, is the first movie that's really like, holy shit, that's a masterpiece.
Help me out here. I'm getting old. Shivers is in the apartment building, right?
Correct.
Oh, no, I really, really like Shivers.
Yeah.
I think in Shivers, he's doing something that he would later be given credit for, that whole sexuality as disease metaphor.
Well, that's, I mean, he does it in Rabbit. He does it a bunch, but Rabbit is very much kind of the same movie as Shivers, I think.
The thing with Barbara Steele in the tub, I think, is really interesting and well done, and especially the thing at the end in the pool,
sure,
where it sort of becomes this thing that, well, maybe the horror is that this is something we might want.
Right.
I have a lot more affection for that film than you do, but I think part of it is because in The American Nightmare, they discuss that film with Cronenberg at some length, and I think the documentary has engendered affectionate feelings in me.
I will rewatch that movie. Again, I didn't dislike it. It's just it's more sort of a blueprint of other better movies that I would see him make. It felt kind of like a first movie where you see, I see all these germs of where this is going to go. You had brought up the Universal Monster movies, and I want to mention this before I forget, and it's a plug for hardly anyone, and it actually isn't going to do you any good because you are traveling out to sunny Los Angeles next weekend. Next Sunday, if you're in or around Chicago on October 12th, that's a Sunday, at the Hollywood Palms Theater in Naperville, Illinois. I'm going to be hosting a screening of The Bride of Frankenstein and The Bride of Frankenstein. And then that's at 5 o'clock and then Scream at 8 p.m. So if you're around and you want to come out, you should come to the Hollywood Palms Theater.
Why don't I know about this?
Because I forgot about it until you mentioned the Universal Monster movies.
Is this part of Chicago Film Critics?
It is, yeah.
And this is at the Hollywood Palms.
Yes.
And you're hosting it.
I am.
And I get to miss it.
And you're going
to
miss it.
And it's Bride of Frankenstein.
And it's Bride of Frankenstein.
God damn it.
I'm sorry. But you get to see your son.
Yeah. The last time I was at the Hollywood Palms, Jan and I went to see Young Frankenstein, and Terry Garr was there.
Yeah.
And did a wonderful Q&A after the film, and they were showing the DVD.
Oh. Well, that's not great.
Which we will now call... We have to expand the glossary after Scary Movie Month. We have to go back and expand the glossary.
Okay.
We have to add Samsung screening.
Let's talk about Vincent Price movies.
Vincent Price. Like Bela Lugosi, is there anything he doesn't make better? So, favorite Vincent Price performances.
Yes.
Dr. Goldfoot and the Bikini Machine.
Number one, sure.
Egghead and the Batman TV series.
Number two.
TV Pitchman 4, and this is a tie, The Hangman Board Game, and the Vincent Price Shrunken Applehead Kit. He was a voice on Scooby-Doo, and number 5, The Old Man in the Cave, in the special Hawaii episode of The Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch go to Hawaii.
I forgot about the fact that...
Good night, everybody.
He was in the cave. It's amazing how much Vincent Price I absorbed through pop culture as a child without really having seen a Vincent Price movie. I think it was years before I saw something that he was actually in. But I was always very much aware of him.
I'm joking. Those are my 5 least favorite.
Obviously.
But I went through IMDb, and this is a man who loved to work.
Yeah.
Because at this point, we should mention, there was a period of time. Vincent Price was an art connoisseur and had quite a private collection. In fact, on the commentary track for House on Haunted Hill, the writer said that instead of giving Price like 12 grand, Castle gave him a percentage, and House on Haunted Hill made a lot of money, and that Vincent Price once revealed to him in his house that he pointed to this new painting, and it was something pretty grand, and said, that's the painting that House on Haunted Hill bought me. For a period of time, I believe it was in the 60s, Vincent Price had a cooperative crossover deal going with Sears Roebuck. I'm not making this up. The Vincent Price curated art collection. And Vincent Price would travel all over the world and buy these weren't prints. These weren't like the affordable art sale
right.
at Holiday Inn where you're buying something that's the size of the sofa or something. This is real art. And Vincent Price was the buyer, and the series had his name on it, and you could go to Sears and buy real art on an installment plan. So this guy didn't miss a trick. He and his wife wrote cookbooks.
Wow.
It was nuts. He did lots of TV.
Yeah.
In fact, toward the end of his career, I was surprised at how few films he was doing.
Yeah.
Except for Most Wales.
Of them are not very good.
Except for Wales of August and Edward Scissorhands, it's a lot of TV.
Yeah, well, he shows up in Dead Heat. He shows up in From a Whisper to a Scream, which has another title. It's an anthology that's not very good, and he's part of the wraparound sequence and seems very old. So we're going to maybe just kind of talk about our five favorite Vincent Price movies each.
And for the sake of fun, let's count them down, meaning let's count up. So let's start at five and go to one.
Okay, we
so
could.
So there's this feeling of...
I didn't arrange them. I just went chronologically.
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry. Well, go ahead with your first one, and I can try to...
This is what happens when we don't talk.
Well,
you could
we
pause
try to surprise
it.
Each other.
You could pause it, and then...
That's not going to happen. Go ahead.
It's not going to be paused?
No.
Why don't we say this?
Okay.
Look at your list,
yeah.
And don't go chronological.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk... This is even better.
All right.
This is better.
All right.
Don't go chronological.
Got it.
And we're not talking in order of preference.
Okay.
That's a lot easier because one of the hardest times I had was ranking them.
Right.
Because they're all great. Because I would watch Vincent Price in a shitty movie before I would watch other actors in a fine film.
Sure.
Because he makes everything better. I watched it to look at the transfer on the new Shout Factory Scream Factory disc. It's the best looking print I've ever seen. And they ported over a commentary track. It's not Gary Don Rhodes. I'm trying to remember who did it. The commentary track is really good. It's one of these autistic guys
right.
who really knows a lot about Vincent
right.
Price. I'm
right.
sorry I'm forgetting your name. One of my five favorite Vincent Price films is House on Haunted Hill.
Okay.
Did that make your list?
It did not.
Okay. It is the standard haunted house film. In fact, at one point on the audio commentary, the commentator goes and says, this is a very old trope, and traces the trope back to theater at the turn of the century. He specifically name checks things like The Cat and the Canary. And we still see these today because one of my criticisms of Your Next was that, in essence, it's an update of
sure.
House on Haunted Hill. You get everyone in a house and they can't leave, and then the shit goes down. So not only is this a great haunted house film, and not only does it feature Vincent Price is the protagonist, but of course, in its original incarnation, it featured Emerjo, and you can recreate Emerjo. It's not too late. What is it, October 5th?
Yep, today's the 5th.
Okay, you got 26 days. Go to the Spirit Halloween Superstore, buy an inflatable skeleton and a piece of string, rig it up in your house so that when Vincent Price goes, look, They're in the basement. His wife is trying to scare him into falling into a vat of acid. Have the skeleton come down. See, I once did this for students.
Yeah.
I recreated all of Castle's gimmicks. Have the skeleton come down on a string and scare you, or you could really recreate what happened in theaters back then because little boys tried to hit the skeleton with popcorn boxes and drink cups and candy boxes. And I've read, John Waters writes about this in one of his books, that often they were successful at knocking the skeleton off the track. It was an inflatable skeleton that, opinions vary. I don't know if it went from the projector booth to the screen or from the screen to the projector booth. It makes more sense for it to start in a box over the screen because then when it goes to the projector booth, they reel it in
right.
and you keep going with the movie. This,
right.
of course, was one of Castle's gimmick films. Vincent Price in a haunted house.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And my favorite parts, besides the fact that it's got like Elijah Cook Jr. and all these great character actors, is the relationship between Price and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
The dialogue is really good. It's
mm-hmm.
like, boy, do they hate each other.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Did you ever see the remake?
No.
It's got a ton of...
Isn't Chris Kattan in that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's got a ton of problems.
And Jeffrey Rush is the...
Yes.
Okay.
And that makes it worth seeing because he's not Vincent Price, but I mean, he's so playing Vincent Price that it's very entertaining to watch his take on it.
Is he as good as his Casanova Frankenstein in Mystery Men?
I like him better in House on Haunted Hill than
really?
I do as Casanova Frankenstein. Both of those came out in 99, though, so that was clearly his year.
So you would recommend the remake?
I would, for the things that are good about it. I think there's some stuff that's genuinely creepy about it. I think the Vincent Price stuff is great, and Famke Janssen plays his wife, and they have a little bit, it's not as good as in the original, but they have a little bit of that dialogue kind of back and forth.
Because I always wondered, back during the time that you're talking about, why there were so many Castle remakes. Was it just...
It was
the studio saying we own this property?
Yeah, it was, I think I want to say it was Dark Sky Films, which was owned by, it was like a Zemeckis company, I think. Warner Brothers had kind of licensed a bunch of these movies, so they started remaking House of Wax, 13 Ghosts. There was a run of these Dark Sky remakes.
And House on Haunted Hill is a great title.
It is a great title. But it came out the same year as The Haunting, which was based on... The Haunting of Hill House, yes. And I think at one point they were going to call it The Haunting of Hill House.
Which is the name of the
differentiate
book.
Differentiate it from the original Jackson book. Robert Wise, right.
And as you know, if you listen to the podcast, the Robert Wise film is just one of the most delicious things ever made. The remake is...
Truly one of the worst horror movies in a long time, I think.
Yeah.
Really bad, but it had such a great trailer that I think it
and
tricked everyone.
And a great cast.
Sure. And Owen Wilson. I picked a William. I'll just kind of bounce off of your picks, hopefully. So I picked another William Castle Price collaboration, and I went with The Tingler.
And that, when I was ranking them, was my number two film.
Okay.
And, well, I want you to talk about why you chose it, because I know why I chose it.
I just think it's a ton of fun, and it's another one of these gimmick movies that the famous thing is that they rigged the seats up to give everyone a shock and you have to scream in order to get rid of the tingler. And so there's all these things. But I think even without all the gimmicks, the movie really plays. And it's a ton of fun. And, I mean, it's ridiculous. The notion that when you become afraid, a giant, like, worm slug forms on your spine that kills you.
Unless you release psychic energy by screaming. That's ridiculous. But I think the film... itself regards that as sort of the MacGuffin.
Yeah.
And they don't spend a lot of time on it.
They spend a lot of time on it.
Although, no. I mean, although when they show it, like, creeping around in the movie theater, the reason why it makes my list is that it has Vincent Price on acid.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah. It goes all these crazy directions, including a long drug trip. And I would argue that the thing at the end – that they use to try to scare somebody in the – it's a bathtub again, right?
Yeah.
It's genuinely kind of scary.
There's a lengthy sequence that's dialogue-free where a woman who is – I know she's mute, but is she also deaf or just mute?
I can't remember.
Well, it doesn't matter if she's deaf because the only reason she's mute is she can't scream.
Right.
And you can see what that's leading to. But that sequence has one of the best scares. I've actually shown that film in class, and it makes everyone jump when that thing comes up.
Yeah. Vincent Price's, you know, special gift was to be aware of the material that he was playing, which was often ridiculous.
Yes.
But he plays it very sincerely. He's very straight about it. And he plays the Tingler like he's in this serious drama. And the way he recites that exposition without laughing is amazing to me.
And I would argue that even when he knows he's in something ridiculous, even something where you can say he's winking at the audience, it's still not obnoxiously winking at the audience.
Sure.
I'm guessing The Raven is not on our list.
It's not.
Okay.
I love it.
And I just watched it a couple nights ago and just had so much fun with it because I hadn't seen it in a really long time. There's a sequence at the beginning where... the Vincent Price character keeps going to the window, but there's a telescope in the way, and he keeps hitting it or almost hitting it, and it's like, why did someone put a telescope here? But when you consider what we find out about his character at the end of the movie, that becomes part of the exposition of what he's – I don't want to spoil it.
Right.
It's very clever. And even though I would suggest all that nonsense with the telescope is winking, it doesn't come across as – obnoxiously superior to the material,
sure.
It comes across as, we're going to have fun with this.
Yeah, absolutely. I rewatched The Raven also thinking that it was probably going to be on my list because I had really fond memories of it. And I noticed something that I noticed about a lot of the Corman Poe movies, which to a movie I love. I mean, I love them all just for the way that they make me feel, just the atmosphere, the way they sound, everything about them. I could just have one on at any time. All of them are they drag a lot. There's long gaps of kind of nothing. So I don't know if that's just, hey, I'm taking a short story and expanding it to feature length, or I don't know what the deal is. The Raven should move a little, it should be a little peppier, given the fact that it's a comedy, given the cast involved.
I always thought because of the budgets, there are sequences that are what would you call it? It's there are sequences in all the Corman Poe films that are the highlights.
Sure.
And those were planned out. In fact, on the supplementary materials, Corman talks about how they used the camera crane as a special effect on the Raven, that's how they did the thing with the flying chair. Mm-hmm. And that sequence obviously has special effects in it. It's got animation in it. Mm-hmm. And that was expensive. So that's where we're putting our money. But the movie has to be 90 minutes long to qualify.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot of them walking around.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that even in the non-comedic Poe movies, I think.
And the reason why The Raven didn't make my list is sort of like what some people's objection to Box Trolls was and what our objection to Godzilla was. I don't think there's enough Vincent Price in The Raven.
Okay.
Peter Lorre so steals the movie, and then at the end we get Boris Karloff. And also, because of the narrative of The Raven, Price is sort of hanging back at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's a supporting player.
And he kind of is relegated to playing the straight man also.
Which he even admits in those he did a series of public television intros to his film. It's like Vincent Price Theater. And
Indiana Public Television, right?
Iowa. Because I thought it was Seattle, and then at the end it said Iowa, and I was wrong. That the Shout Factory found these, and they've added them to the discs. And on his introduction to The Raven, he said, clearly I was playing straight man to Lorre.
Who was making up his entire part.
Who liked to ad-lib. Yeah. And Price said that drove Karloff nuts because Karloff was very old school. And apparently, according to Vincent Price, it was all Lorre's idea that his son would revere him and he would hate his son. That whole zeitgeist was Lorre's idea.
And this is a tangent, but correct me if I'm wrong. The Raven was the movie where they had a few days left in the schedule, and so they shot The Terror?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought, to make use of the sets, and that's how Nicholson ends up in The Terror.
And I can never remember the movie that they were working on, but Corman was later making a movie in Ireland, had the sets and the cast, and they finished early. And he let Francis Ford Coppola do Dementia 13, which I've always thought is interesting because no one remembers, I think it was like The Young Racers or something, I don't know, that Dementia 13 is really good when you consider the backstory, and that we remember the two-day movie more than the three-week movie. So, should I go next?
Yeah.
I have a tie.
Okay.
Don't get mad.
I'm not.
But I think this is justified. Abominable Dr. Fibes and Theater of Blood, to me, tied because they're the same movie.
I would have put both on my list. I put them right next to each other, and I was going to name the one you didn't name for that exact same reason.
And I think in Fibes, I think what the amazing part is that he's so constricted by the makeup for a good part of the movie, except the flashbacks, that it's really the triumph of him as this pop culture icon, almost like Claude Rains in The Invisible Man. The performance is his voice, because that makeup is horrible. So Theater of Blood has the advantage that this is full on Price, and we can accuse him in other films of maybe overacting a little bit, but Theater of Blood is just so over the top.
It's him commenting, I think, on those accusations of overacting.
You could see him getting the project and saying, I get to play an actor.
It becomes funny again. It's the thing that goes so far that it's now funny again, how over the top he is. And Theater of Blood, I love Fibes for the way it looks. I mean, it's so kind of psychedelic, and I love the designs, like in his lair. It's so much fun to watch, and on the Blu-ray, it's real colorful, and it looks great.
One of the only Art Deco horror films.
And Theater of Blood doesn't have that going for it. It's kind of a drab movie.
It's London ugly.
Yeah, I like that. But it's, like, gorier. It kind of has that going for it. It's like a rated R Vincent Price movie, which there weren't a ton of. And, but they're the exact same movie.
And we saw Theater of Blood a couple years ago at a massacre.
We saw Fives also.
Right. Yeah. And my memory is that Theater of Blood really played. I mean, it was...
Theater of Blood was a lot of fun. And Theater of Blood was like the 5 a.m. movie.
Yeah.
And it maybe came after the Fulci. And then so it was like, oh, this is what I needed to get me back into this.
And I came back just in time for Theater of Blood. And I was like, oh, okay. I am revitalized. Also... Abominable Dr. Fives features a series of murders based on the plagues of Egypt. This is done better in The Mummy, the Brendan Fraser version. And Theater of Blood, I believe the murders are from famous plays or even all from Shakespeare.
I think they're all from Shakespeare.
And that it's the same movie. I mean, clearly, I think maybe Theater of Blood wouldn't exist if Fives was a big success.
And you and I have pointed out, I think, in talking about both movies that they both go on a little bit too long. There's a few too many of the murders.
What if there were only five plagues of Egypt?
Right.
What if two could be combined?
Because I think
plague?
They both, and I don't remember what Theater of Bloods is. Fives, I remember, really peaks at sort of a logical point, and then you want it to move into Act Three, but then there's two or three more murders, and they're not as fun as the one before. I keep thinking of the... It's like a unicorn's horn through the door, and then it spins around.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's so great.
This is pretty elaborate. But it's very similar to what we were talking about on the Mummy podcast, that one of the things we like about the Mummy is that it's almost value-added. Oh, there's all this stuff going on. By the way, that's the seven plagues of Egypt. Whereas in Fives, we're going to get all
right.
In excruciating detail, because, of course, the film has to be 90 minutes.
I tried to watch Dr. Fives Rises Again, right? Is that what it's called?
Yes, I believe so.
Which is on the volume two of the Shadow Factory Vincent Price collection. And it looks great. I wasn't having as much fun with it.
I haven't watched that one yet on the Scream Factory, Shout Factory disc, and I'll eventually get around to it, but I haven't seen it in a really long time. By the way, just to reiterate, all of the transfers on both boxes are just, you will never see the film look this good.
Yeah.
You will never. They are doing their job.
And if you're at all a Vincent Price fan, I mean, just pick them both up, because they're so much fun to have, especially around Halloween.
So Abominable Dr. Fives, Theater of Blood, it's the same movie, but you should see both.
Yeah.
And now what's another one on your list?
One of those would have been on mine, so I will bring up – oh, since we talked about The Raven, I'll mention Tales of Terror, which is a Corman Poe adaptation. It's an anthology, actually. It does three stories. Vincent Price is in all three. And it opens the same – Corman had these tricks for these Poe movies that they all – they always ended with the Poe quote, and they always started with the psychedelic credits that looked like somebody splattering paint around over the titles.
Yeah, at the beginning of
it's over a bunch of them.
It's the ocean, but
right.
They've solarized it,
right.
So it looks like paint being
right.
Slashed around.
And he does that a couple times, so he does that on Tales of Terror also. So Vincent Price is in all three. The first story is Morella. The second one, they call the Black Cat, but it's basically some combination of the Black Cat and Cask of Amontillado. And then the third one is the facts in the case of M. Valdemar, Monsieur Valdemar, and Basil Rathbone is in that one. So that's fun. Peter Lorre is in the Black Cat. That middle section, which is Peter Lorre and Vincent Price, is what sort of inspired them to do The Raven, because it's much more comedic. And Corman said, oh, this kind of works. I wonder if we could do this as a feature. And so Richard Matheson wrote the script for The Raven, and having nothing to do with The Raven. I'd want to say he wrote the screenplay for Tales of Terror also. I love it. I love all three stories. I think I like the third one the least. Of that middle section is so much fun. And again, we get this crazy hallucinogenic sequence where Peter Lorre is having this nightmare. It's so much fun to watch the two of them play against one another. Price gets to be really funny as sort of this prissy, erudite snob. And they have a scene where they're having a wine tasting contest where Vincent Price does some of the biggest overacting of his career. And it's the funniest shit you've ever seen.
You had mentioned recently that Vincent Price's wine tasting face was your spirit animal.
I love it so much.
And I haven't seen it in a dog's age. Thought I owned it. I don't own it.
Okay.
Is it on one of those double feature discs?
It's in the old Price box, yeah.
The old Price box.
When MGM had them all, they released those double feature discs individually.
Right.
And then years ago.
Okay, I'm remembering the cover, and this was on regular DVD.
Yeah, in the slim cases. But yeah, it is on a double feature disc with Twice Told Tales, which is also an anthology, which Vincent Price is also in, but is not nearly as good.
Okay, so bottom line, you all need to see it,
yeah.
And I need to borrow yours,
yeah,
because I want to see it again.
And I really hope, for some reason I had it in my head that it was on one of these two Shout Factory boxes.
And it's not.
Same with Theater of Blood.
Because that's where I went to see it, because as Patrick and I were anticipating Vincent Price Scream Factory Box 2, he had sent me a poorly worded text that made me think they had announced 3. They have not announced 3. Settle down. Take a deep breath. What he was trying to convey as he texted while he drove, which is always dangerous, kids, is that clearly there's enough for a third box,
yeah.
And Scream Factory needs to get on it.
I really hope they do a third.
But this reminds me that as we're recording this, this could be a bummer.
What?
If you ordered the Vincent Price box from Scream Factory, you got it a month early,
yeah.
And you got a poster. Did you get the poster?
No.
I'll show you the poster when we're done.
Okay.
It's fun. Oh, it's the cover of the box.
Sure.
It's not out yet.
No. It comes out at the end of October.
We're talking about this and
yeah, so everybody can order it and buy it.
Get excited, but
yeah. These movies are all available. It's not like they can't see the movies. See the movies and then order the Blu-ray box.
We're dangling a steak in front of there.
We're doing advertising.
I saw something that you can't see for 2 weeks yet.
Scream Factory, by the way, is doing that. For pretty much all their titles now, if you order it directly through them, you get it weeks ahead of time, which is great, especially this time of year, because they got stuff coming out in November that you're like, but I want it for Halloween. Well, you can get it.
And if anyone's wondering how to fight against Amazon, here's a real good way.
Yeah, right.
I want it early, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. You get posters. I specifically ordered Phantom of the Paradise through Scream Factory because I wanted that cover art as a poster.
And this is similar to what Randy Newman once said about Pixar, that they had made so many films and what their batting average is. Has Scream Factory, Shout Factory put out anything yet that's been disappointing?
Not in terms of, you know, what they've done with it, I don't think. They've put out some movies that is like, well,
but
that's
I would
not great.
Even argue that their choices, that 75, I mean, knowing that a video company isn't going to be putting out things that are just to my taste, 75% of those Scream Factory titles are desirable and worthwhile.
You will get no argument
for whatever reason.
You will get no arguments there from me. I have said before.
And you actually buy more of them than I do.
I want all of them.
Because there's some shit that I'm not.
I want all of them. I am convinced that Scream Factory has my house bugged because they keep legitimizing movies that I was sure only I liked. For, you know, Night of the Comet, The Funhouse, Life Force.
And even Phantom of the Paradise. I remember when they made that announcement and I was like, well, Patrick's vindicated, and that region-free Blu-ray player I bought is now useless because the main reason I bought that was to buy the Phantom of the Paradise from France.
But now they have Stuart Gordon's Dolls coming out. They have Toby Hooper's Invaders from Mars. I mean, it's all these movies that, again, like, I'm the only one who likes these, right? Nope. Scream Factory says, we all like them.
Did you see Invaders from Mars when it first came out?
No.
Okay.
I saw it on Laserdisc.
Sometimes I get confused about just how old or young Patrick is.
Sure.
Because I saw it when it first came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, I like what this guy's doing. And it got...
Oh, man.
It got shit on.
Yeah. Oh, big time. Still. It's hard to sell people on that movie, but...
I like it a lot.
It's fun, man. If not for that bad child actor.
And at this point...
Sorry,
Carson,
Hunter Carson.
Hunter Carson. At this point, we're staring at a polystone figure that my wife gave me for Christmas one year. I don't know if it works anymore, but it's battery operated and the little thing lights up to make it look like it's red hot, to make the poker red hot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's Vincent Price in The Pit and the Pendulum, which I said was my second favorite Vincent Price film.
Okay.
Is that on your list?
It is not, but it could have been again.
And there's a couple reasons for this because it was difficult and I wanted to ask you if it was difficult that more so than the other listy shows we've done, I'm wondering, am I picking these because I like Price or am I picking them because I like the movie?
Okay.
And again, that might have played into my decision to rank them because sometimes, of course, he's a lot better than the movie he's in. The Pit and the Pendulum I chose for a couple of reasons. One of them is that it really gives him this sort of nice acting bonus because for about three quarters of the film, he's this scared guy who's not quite sure what's going on. And then, spoiler alert, but the film is old enough, I think I can spoil this. He's driven to the edge, and he channels the spirit of his father.
Yeah.
And he becomes a completely different character.
Yeah.
And every time I watch it, I'm impressed by how he differentiates the two and how he makes them two separate people. Plus, all of the ways that he tortures people, to me, are terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Devin Faraci says we're not supposed to do this.
Uh-oh.
The first time I saw Pit and the Pendulum was a free screening at the Arlington Memorial Library. I think I was 9 or 10. And it was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. And there's a shot when they go into the crypt and open a coffin.
Okay.
And it scared me to death. How that plays out, I still remember. It was like the meeting room at the Arlington Memorial Library.
Is that what Devin Faraci says we're not supposed to do? See movies at libraries?
No. Devin Faraci wrote an excellent column, which I took to heart because I'm not sure if I... This is a major tangent, folks. Fast forward 5 minutes. That there is writing about movies, and then there's writing about...
Your memory of movies.
Your experience with movies.
Okay.
I prefer both, but maybe not a 50-50 ratio, but I think the second part is part of it.
You can't divorce the two.
But clearly, sort of taking the University of Chicago approach... that the movie is a system that we're going to analyze, someone would argue, and I believe Faraci was, that your personal experience has nothing to do with it, and he's not interested in the first time you saw a film.
Okay.
I think sometimes it's interesting, if only because every time I watch The Pit and the Pendulum now, it's informed by that first screening.
Right.
And as we've discussed endlessly in October, part of what made us horror fans is that we're trying to get that back.
Right.
Because that was so fun to get so scared, and then you rode your bike home, and you were okay, but you got so scared, but everything was okay.
And isn't there some
The whole chasing the dragon.
Isn't there some value in trying to ask, what is it about this movie that spoke to your 9-year-old self? What is it about this movie that grabbed you in a way that other movies didn't and has stuck with you if you want to bring it back to the movie? Then we can do that, but you're still talking about your experience. I don't know.
I think to a 9 or 10-year-old, wanting to kill someone, but choosing this very inefficient way of building this blade right. that comes down. But again, right. children have wild imaginations. And clearly this is what Edgar Allan Poe was after because he was writing this in a book. He wasn't presenting it visually on film. That if he goes through with what he's trying... This guy's going to get cut in half.
Right.
And at 9 or 10, well, what would that look like? And what would that be like?
Right.
And it's really, I mean, talk about engendering suspense. Also the anger when Price becomes his dad, that was something I thought was really interesting. If someone would get that mad because, let's just leave it at that. That was very interesting to me as a child.
I really do love all those Corman Poe movies. And I don't know... if I have two left or three left, because one of them was like a tie and I was like, yeah, me too. So I'll very quickly just say I would probably include Tomb of Lygia on my list. Just again, as a great example of, and it's very similar in a lot of ways where instead of Vincent Price being possessed by somebody else, he's convinced that his lover is and he's tortured over that. And again, you're just talking about great atmosphere, great sets. Great Vincent Price performance. What's the one that you and I watched last Halloween? It was on that first Vincent Price box. The Haunted Palace?
The Haunted Mansion.
The Haunted Palace, right?
Because I was trying to remember
that. It's like the first one that I haven't really liked.
They all kind of...
Yeah.
One thing, though, about Tomb of Lygia, at the beginning of that film, and I really give Vincent Price credit, or Corman, that in every film he looks kind of different. Mm-hmm. They find ways of making him look different. The coolest costume in any of the, you know what I'm talking
about?
At the beginning of Tomb of Lygia, that hat and those sunglasses.
Yeah.
It's like, That is a slick motherfucker.
So I'll do my number two because I'm suspecting we have the same number one, although I might be totally wrong. You might have gone a totally different way with your number one. So I'll do my number two and then we'll see what happens.
Dr. Goldfoot and the Girl Bond.
That's right. You led off with sequel. That. I forgot.
No.
Oh, the Gold Bond.
No. Gold Bonds is so much better.
It's the Empire Strikes Back of the Dr. Goldfoot movies. It's a movie that I know you're not a huge fan of, and that is Witchfinder General, which is included on the first price box.
I knew that would make your list.
Yeah. They showed it at a massacre a couple years ago, so you can go back and listen to our podcast on that one. I think it was like 2 years ago, because I know you were not a huge fan of it, and I just think it's such a great movie and a Vincent Price performance that is unlike any other performance he ever gave. There's always sort of a dramatic flair to his performance. A lot of times it's sort of a kind of a sense of fun, you know. This is just dark and nasty.
That's my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
That there is no smirking.
No.
There is no winking.
No.
This is...
Yeah.
Shows what he could have done had he not been typecast.
Right, right. He's great in the movie, and again, the story behind the movie is fascinating because he... And the director, give me 2 seconds because I always want to say it's Michael, but it's Matthew. No, Michael Reeves. Hated one another. Michael Reeves was just this kid and they couldn't stand one another. And Michael Reeves ended up dying shortly after this movie came out. And it's like, oh, wow, what a talent he might have been had he not overdosed on drugs. But just a great Vincent Price performance. And to me, a really dark, interesting, well-done movie.
And I would say I don't love it as much as you do.
Yeah.
But I love the Price performance, and I really like how dark it's willing to go in the service of actually yes. talking about something yes.
that's... It's not darkness for its own sake.
That's
right.
still with us today.
Yes.
If Price knows that there are no witches, then why is he doing this? And in a weird way, it's very much like Box Trolls, if you think about it.
Okay.
Think of Vincent Price as Snatcher.
Sure. But in Witchfinder General, it's because he wants to, like, fuck these women, right? I mean, that's not really
true. Well, true. That's not in the children's film. That's nowhere to be found in the children's film. But I'm talking about someone who is put in a position of power to do something that doesn't really need to be done right. for their own selfish ends.
Sure. Yes, absolutely.
In fact, the characters all kind of look like each yeah. other, if you think about it, with the
yeah.
hat.
Yeah.
I think there's something there. I find some of the violence really ugly,
yeah.
although I think that's part of the
Again,
point.
Again, to a point, right?
And maybe it's just that when Vincent Price shows up, I want to have fun.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's a big part of it.
It's not fun.
How would you say it played at the massacre?
Hard to say. I mean, I thought it went over well, and so then I was very surprised to hear that you didn't really like it.
I thought it threw some people for a loop.
It probably did.
People and
Vincent Price.
Yeah.
It's this movie from the 60s or 70s.
Where's the winking and the
right,
smirking?
Right.
Oh, no, that's not what Reeves
And it ends from. On, I mean, when I won't spoil it, but I mean, it gets to its sort of darkest place in the last few minutes, and you're just like, that's it? That's how we're walking out of this thing? It's rough, but really well worth your time, I think.
And then we decided that perhaps, working completely independently,
yes.
we have arrived at the same film for...
We may have, but I'm second-guessing it. Go ahead.
House of Wax.
Okay. See, I was wrong.
Okay.
So at the last minute, I thought, no, he might go House of Wax. Mine is Mask of the Red Death.
That was on the list for a really long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, mine is Mask of the Red Death. And I assumed yours would be, and then when I pulled up my list for 2 seconds, I was like, oh, neither of us said House of Wax. I bet that's what it is. Okay, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I hadn't seen House of Wax in a dog's age.
Great movie.
And then they showed it at the massacre. And that was one of the massacres that Jake went to.
Okay.
And we were both like, this is – to see this in widescreen in a theater with an audience.
Are you talking about – which one are you talking about? Not House of Wax.
No, Mask of the Red Death.
Mask of the Red Death.
I'm okay. talking about yours now.
That's what I thought.
Okay. Let's shift gears like an attention.
That was track. Joe Dante's print of the movie.
Mask of the Red Death. And you were at that massacre as well.
Right. And Joe Dante was there to show Piranha and his Masters of Horror. And he brought that print of Mask of the Red Death.
So this was pretty long time ago.
It was like the second one.
Because the Masters of Horror he showed was the...
Homecoming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a lot longer ago than I thought.
That was my first viewing of Mask of the Red Death. And that was really the movie that made me fall in love with these Corman Poe movies.
And that was the first time I had ever seen Mask of the Red Death, because it had always eluded me.
Yeah.
And talk about an absence of winking and smirking. What's going on in that film is just batshit crazy dark.
Yeah.
And I was watching, I think, part of it, or watching the trailer, because I've been going through this box. And I don't think this is a spoiler alert. At the end of the film, Vincent Price shows up in a very unique costume and makeup. And it's so great, and it's so creepy, because instead of just, well, he's red, he's the Red Death. Those blood streaks they put coming out of his eyes, that's inspired.
Yeah.
The whole idea of dancing while the world is going to hell. On one of the supplementary features, Corman reveals that he wanted to make Mask of the Red Death earlier in the series. Once the first one took off, he wanted to do that second, but was afraid people would compare it to Seven Seal.
Oh.
Because it's got a lot of similarities. Yeah. You wouldn't normally think that
right.
it did.
Right.
But he said he made a couple more Corman Poes, and then he said, screw it, I don't care, because I really, really want to do this. Came within a hair's breadth of making the list.
Yeah. And much closer in terms of the price performance to Witchfinder General than a lot of the other movies that we're talking about. And really, I think the movie, and I mean, Corman directed a lot of movies that I like, but that's the movie I think that you could hold up and say, no, this guy was a real talent. And a lot of it is helped, of course, by, I remember seeing it the first time and being so impressed by the cinematography, and then seeing the end credits and it's Nicholas Roeg, and you're like, well, of course, that's why all the red pops so much.
Explain that.
Right.
Also, it's got Jane Asher in it, like the year after she broke up with Paul McCartney, because they were an item for a really long time. And Jane Asher's really, really good in that film. Yeah. Patrick McNee,
I think.
And who later shows up in some Kubrick films. Yeah. He's really, really good.
Yeah.
The actor who plays Hop Toad. The casting is really, really good.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps because of the Nicholas Roeg influence, a lot of the psychedelic color stuff that's in all the films works better.
Right.
And contributes to the theme more in this. But no, that came really close to making my list.
And it's funny because of all the movies that we've named, my top two, Witchfinder General and Mask of the Red Death, are probably like two that I would go to the least. Because like you said, when you put on a Vincent Price movie, you want to have fun. So I'll put on The Raven or Tales of Terror, or just like, wee, this is fun. And those movies don't have that kind of a thing. So they're great movies, but like they're not escapist movies necessarily.
Patrick here is being less than honest. The film he really put on is that one beach party movie that Vincent Price is in, which I can never remember which one it is.
Which one is he in?
He's in one of them.
They're all the same. No, he's in like, I'm not going to remember it.
Which this morning made me think, because I've been watching all these Corman Poes, that if you were, back then, if you were sitting around American International, they would put you in the movie.
For sure.
Because Boris Karloff shows up, Vincent Price shows up, Buster Keaton's in a bunch of them. Yeah. It's like, you, sitting there, get over here, be in the movie. What's your name? Jack Nicholson.
And, okay, so let's go back to House of Wax.
House of Wax is really interesting because it's Vincent Price not in an American International film, but in a big-budget Hollywood film that was one of the...
And kind of the one that sets him down the horror path, no?
Very much.
Okay.
And you can see a lot of proto-fibes stuff in it in terms of the big reveal.
Proto-fibes is my new favorite word, by the way.
Well, that's good. recently, I was able to watch 3D at home. I wrote about this in a Drunk and Foolish Pleasures column, and one of the first movies I watched was House of Wax, because there was a time when the Music Box Theater, the happiest place on earth, was the only theater in Chicago that could actually show the original 3D, because it required two projectors that were synced up with Polaroid glasses, not that red-green bullshit. And they showed it as part of the Chicago Film Festival one year at midnight, and I took students back when you could do things like that. And we were just so blown away by it that since then I had seen it again in a theater, but the 3D wasn't as good. And then I sat down and watched it at home, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
So I think the 3D and the novelty of that and seeing it working both at the Music Box and at home has something to do with it. But the scene in House of Wax that really gets me is when Vincent Price reopens the House of Wax and he takes those people on the tour, mm-hmm. the dialogue is so delightful. And he's wheeling around his wheelchair and he's got these little bon mots about all the, I can't remember any of them, but it's sort of dry. And he's sort of wheeling around and describing all this horrific imagery because now he knows that's what people want to see. That's a terrific scene.
Yeah. I'm always distracted by the paddleball at the beginning. That's when you say House of Wax.
The paddleball is halfway through. The paddleball is when he reopens.
Oh, okay.
No,
well,
you can't
have all
put
the prologue
that.
Stuff.
You
that's
can't
right.
put that at the beginning. But the first time I saw it on TV, the Channel 7 3:30 movie, where you'd see half of it because they had to cut out so much for commercials, I still remember watching it, and the opening sequence when all the figures melt was really scary.
Sure.
And it's so dwelled upon.
Right.
With the face melting and the eyeball popping. Right. I'm convinced Steven Spielberg was influenced by that.
Maybe.
For the thing. At the end of Indiana Jones, that Doug recently made a very funny joke about.
How would you describe the affect that Vincent Price has on his voice? No one talks like him. No one pronounces words the way he does. But what is it?
This is a theory. I may be wrong. But one of the supplementary materials on one of the boxes, I can't keep them straight, it's all a blur, is sort of a profile of him.
Okay.
And he was born in the United States, but he went – no, I'm screwing this up. He was born in the United States. He went to Yale, but then he spent some time in Europe.
Okay.
And that's where he started acting. And I think that might be it.
And that's what it is. I mean, it's something he has in common with a lot of classical actors of about 10 years prior, you know. They're American actors who all have, like, pseudo-British affects on
their
voices.
Well, Madonna also has, strangely. But
Vincent Price carried it on a little bit longer.
The thing I always like about Vincent Price, and this paints me as an old man who's just grumpy, is he really has respect for the dialogue, even if it's awful, mm-hmm. and enunciates. He knows that part of his job is that we have to understand what he's saying, which many other actors in the 50s and 60s didn't bother with. I mean, he is an elocutionist.
And again,
first and foremost,
he's not for everyone, and maybe he's an acquired taste to some, but if you're a fan of Vincent Price, I don't think you ever see him give a bad performance.
I don't think
or not a committed performance. He tries always.
And at the beginning of the podcast, I was talking about this shrunken Applehead kit that he was hawking on TV. Even in that commercial, there's this sense of, this is a lot of fun.
Right.
Maybe less so in Witchfinder and Mask of the Red Death. But in almost all of his performances, there's an underlying joy of performance that I think most of us have identified as one of the marks of a great actor, that he's clearly enjoying himself and inviting us to come and have fun and make these shrunken heads out of apples. And he holds them up. And I really thought he made those. And that looked like it could be fun.
Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. Keep rocking it out for Scary Movie Month. Go watch a bunch of Vincent Price movies. Get the Volume 2 box set when it comes out in a few weeks. Sorry about that.
And, of course, have another potato. We'll be right back.